All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're diving into a 1991 Arkansas Supreme Court case.
Oh, okay.
It's called Manitowoc Remanufacturing Incorporated versus Vauc.
Interesting name.
Yeah, and we're focusing on really kind of two major issues here in this case.
Okay.
When does a chancery court actually step into these neighborly disputes, you know,
Right.
like especially when somebody claims there's some kind of nuisance and they want the court to like actually do
Yeah.
something about it.
Yeah, that's a really important point, because courts can't just be stepping in all willy-nilly into people's business,
Right,
right? They
sorry.
have to have a reason, a justification for their involvement,
Yeah.
and this idea of a nuisance is often that trigger.
Okay.
So understanding when a nuisance actually rises to the level where a court feels it has the authority to intervene, that's critical.
Yeah. And then the second thing is, what do you have to show to be able to use somebody else's property legally? Like, what's the standard there?
Yeah, and especially in a case like this, where we're dealing with something artificial,
Right.
it's not just like a natural stream running through properties. We're talking about a dam, a man-made structure.
A dam. Yeah. And that really gets into this whole world of easements.
Absolutely. We're talking about prescriptive easements, implied easements, all those fun things that property law students love.
Oh yeah, easements. Those are the bread and butter of property disputes.
They really are. And they can get tricky. Because you're essentially claiming a right to use someone else's land.
Yeah.
So the legal requirements for establishing those rights are pretty specific. You have to really dot your I's and cross your T's.
Okay, well let's just jump into this case. I think the story's pretty fascinating.
Yeah, it is. It kind of starts out, pretty simple. We've got this railroad company, right?
Okay.
Back in the day, and they had this gravel bed, they were mining gravel, probably for the railroad, and
Okay.
makes sense. And over time, this gravel bed kind of morphed into, it started functioning like a flood control dam.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and then, fast forward a bit, the railroad sells off some of its land.
Okay.
Different owners come into the
But it's
picture.
not the railroad who's running the show anymore.
Right, the property gets divided up.
Got it.
And eventually you've got this manufacturing business, Manitowoc, that ends up owning the property that benefited from this kind of accidental dam.
Okay.
And then the folks who end up with the land where the gravel bed is, the Vaux, they start messing with the gravel.
Oh no.
Yeah. And you can probably guess what happens next.
Flooding.
Flooding. Manitowoc's business is inundated. They're shut down.
Oh wow.
And that's where the legal battle really kicks off.
So they take it to court.
They do. They go to the Chancery Court, which,
Yes.
as we mentioned, is, the Court of Equity.
Right.
The court that can issue injunctions, make people do things, stop doing things. But here's the twist. The Chancery Court initially dismissed the case.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they basically said, look, this isn't really our area.
Yeah.
We don't have the jurisdiction to handle this.
So why? What was their reasoning behind that?
Well, it all boils down to this concept of equitable jurisdiction,
Okay.
which is really just a fancy way of saying whether a Chancery Court has the power to grant the specific relief that a party is asking for.
Okay.
And in this case, the Chancery Court thought that what Manitowoc was seeking didn't fall under their umbrella of authority.
Okay, but then it goes to the Arkansas Supreme Court.
It does, yeah.
And they obviously disagree.
They do. And this is where it gets really interesting because the Supreme Court actually reverses that decision
Okay.
and sends it back down to the Chancery Court.
So they're saying the Chancery Court does have the authority.
Exactly.
Okay, so why? What changed their minds?
Well, the key was the type of relief that Manitowoc was asking for.
Oh.
They weren't just looking for money, like damages, to compensate them for the losses from the flood.
Yeah, I mean that makes sense. That's a pretty typical lawsuit, right?
Right. Someone harms you, you sue them for money to make up for the harm.
Right.
But Manitowoc primarily wanted an injunction.
An injunction. Okay.
They wanted the court to order the Vauc to stop messing with the gravel bed.
Like to literally stop them from causing more flooding.
Exactly. That's what an injunction is. It's a court order that compels someone to either do something or refrain from doing something specific.
So it's not just about, who owes who money. It's about actually changing the behavior.
Exactly. And historically, that's what chancery courts were all about.
Oh, yeah.
They were the courts of equity. They focused on these kinds of remedies that went beyond just awarding monetary damages.
Okay, so the Supreme Court was essentially saying, look, if the main thing you want is an injunction to stop a nuisance, then the Chancery Court is the right place to be.
Exactly. That's a really important takeaway from this case.
Okay, all right. So the case is back in play. It's back down at the Chancery Court level.
Right.
So now Manitowoc has to argue, hey, we actually have a legal right to have this gravel bed, you know, this accidental dam to stay put.
Right. And that's where these concepts of easements come in.
Yeah, they bring up two types, right? Prescriptive and implied.
Yeah, they try both arguments.
Okay, so let's tackle prescriptive easements first. What was their argument there?
So the idea behind a prescriptive easement is that if you use someone else's property openly and continuously for a certain period of time.
Okay.
And that use is adverse to the owner's rights.
Okay, so like you're acting like you have a right to be there even though you don't necessarily on paper?
Exactly. Then you can actually gain a legal right to continue that use. It's like, hey, we've been doing this for so long. It's just the way things are now.
Okay, but it's got to be more complicated than that, right?
Oh, it definitely is. There are specific elements you have to prove to establish a prescriptive easement.
Okay, like what?
Well, in Arkansas, the use has to be, like I said, adverse to the true owner's rights.
Okay.
It has to be under a claim of right, meaning you're acting like you have a legitimate right to be there.
Okay.
It has to be open and notorious,
yeah.
So the use is visible, not hidden. And it has to be continuous for the entire statutory period, which is generally 7 years in Arkansas.
Okay, so basically you can't just sneak onto someone's property once a year and claim you have a prescriptive easement.
Nope, not at all. You have to be pretty blatant about it. And that's what the Arkansas Supreme Court really focused on in this case.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they highlighted this claim of right element.
Okay.
And they said that it usually requires more than just using the property.
So like more than just, you know, in this case, Manitowoc benefiting from the flood control for all those years.
Exactly. They need to show they did something that really demonstrated they believed they had a right to that flood protection.
Mm-hmm.
Something that would have put the Fox or even the previous owners on notice that Manitowoc was claiming a legal entitlement.
Like overt acts, they called them, right?
Yeah, overt acts.
Right.
That's the key phrase here.
Mm-hmm.
Just passively benefiting from the dam's existence might not cut it.
So did the court think that Manitowoc had actually done enough to meet that standard?
Well, they didn't make a final ruling on that.
Okay.
Because remember, they sent the case back down to the Chancery Court for more proceedings.
Right, right.
But they did say that showing these overt acts was going to be crucial for Manitowoc.
Okay, so that's prescriptive easements. What about implied easements?
All right, so implied easements are a little different.
Okay.
These come into play when you've got one big piece of property.
Okay.
And then it gets divided up.
Okay, like the railroad selling off portions of the land.
Exactly. And the idea is, if before the property was split up, there was an obvious and continuous use of one part of the land to benefit another part, and that use was reasonably necessary for the enjoyment of the benefited part, then the law might say, hey, even though we didn't write it down, an easement was created when the property was divided.
Oh, interesting. So it's like an unspoken agreement based on how the property was being used.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah.
And this often comes up in situations where a landowner is using one part of their property to benefit another part, which is called a quasi-easement.
Quasi-easement, okay.
And then when the land is sold off, that quasi-easement can turn into an actual legally enforceable easement.
So in this case, if that gravel bed back when the railroad owned everything was clearly providing flood control to the land that Manitowoc now owns.
Right.
And it was obvious that it was doing that. That could potentially create an implied easement.
Yeah, that's the argument. But just like with prescriptive easements, there's a specific test to determine if an implied easement exists.
Of course there is. Okay, so what are the requirements in Arkansas?
Well, there are three main ones. First, the condition or the use that creates the easement has to have been apparent at the time the property was sold.
Apparent, okay.
So in this case, the gravel bed acting as a dam and providing flood control.
Right.
That had to be something a buyer could see or reasonably figure out.
Okay, so it can't be some hidden underground thing.
Right. It has to be pretty obvious.
Okay, what's the second requirement?
The second requirement is that the condition or use has to have been continuous.
Continue.
Meaning it was in existence and working at the time the property was divided.
Okay, so it can't be something that was like only used occasionally or was broken down half the time.
Exactly. It has to be a consistent feature of the property.
Okay, and the third one?
The third requirement is necessity. The condition or use has to have been necessary for the reasonable use and enjoyment of the benefited land.
Okay, so in this case, Manitowoc would have to show that the flood control provided by the dam was essential for them to run their business.
Exactly. Without it, their property would be constantly flooding and they wouldn't be able to operate.
Okay, so did the Supreme Court think Manitowoc had made a good case for an implied easement?
Well, they said that Manitowoc's initial arguments were strong enough to potentially meet these requirements.
Okay.
So they sent the case back down to the Chancery Court to really dig into the facts and figure out if the implied easement actually existed.
Okay, so it's not a slam dunk for Manitowoc, but they're still in the game.
Exactly. And the Supreme Court even cited some previous cases to support Manitowoc's position.
Oh, like what?
Well, there's one called Mitchell Drainage District versus Farmers Irrigation District.
Okay.
And another one called Greisinger versus Klinhart.
All right.
And these cases basically say that if a landowner creates something on their property that benefits another part of their property,
okay,
they can't just change it later on in a way that harms the other property, even if they've sold it off.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's like you can't just go back on an arrangement that was already in place, even if it wasn't formally written down.
Right. The law recognizes that the way land is used and set up can create expectations and obligations even without explicit contracts.
Okay, so let me see if I've got this straight. For an implied easement, you need to show it was apparent,
right,
continuous at the time of the sale,
yes,
and necessary for the reasonable use of your land.
Got it.
And for a prescriptive easement, it's adverse use under a claim of right for at least 7 years in Arkansas. And you've got to have those overt acts. Right?
Exactly. Those are the key elements for each type of easement.
Okay, so what are the big takeaways for our listeners?
Well, I think this case shows us a few things. First, don't assume that a chancery court will automatically throw out a nuisance case.
Okay.
Especially if the main goal is to get an injunction to stop the nuisance. That's something they have the power to do.
Right.
Second, remember that stuff built on land, even if it seems temporary or informal, can actually lead to lasting property rights.
Yeah, like this accidental dam.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And those rights can affect future owners. So if you're buying property, you need to look beyond just the deed.
Okay.
Consider how the land's being used, what's been built on it, and what legal implications that might have down the road.
It's like you could be buying more than just the land. You could be buying into a whole set of legal rights and obligations.
Exactly. And those can be tricky to untangle.
All right. Well, for all of our law students out there, I hope this deep dive into Manitowoc versus Vauk has given you some food for thought.
Me too. It's a great example of how property law and equity intersect.
And how even something as simple as a pile of gravel can spark a major legal battle.
It really highlights how the physical realities of land use can have huge legal consequences.
Absolutely. So on that note, here's a final thought for everyone to consider. Think about all the infrastructure and changes we humans have made to the landscape over time. Oh. Irrigation systems, retaining walls, all sorts of things.
Right.
Could those things, which were maybe built for one purpose, end up unintentionally creating property rights for future owners?
That's a great question. It really makes you think about the long-term impact of our actions.
Exactly. Thanks for joining us on the Deep Dive.
It's been a pleasure.
We'll see you next time.